Hi, it's Mark Bittman, and welcome to Food. As always, you can reach us at food@markbittman.com. We're happy to answer questions, hear suggestions, comments, criticisms, whatever you want to send us. And we hope you'll subscribe to the podcast, rate us wherever you get your podcasts, and also consider subscribing to the Bittman Project, which is at bittmanproject.com, our near daily newsletter.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Kate and I have with us today the first famous food guy I ever met, and that is Jacques Pepin, who is almost exactly 15 years my senior, and we met when I was 34 and he was 49 or thereabouts, and man, was I overwhelmed. It was really something. We had a mutual friend who said, why don't you come to dinner with my friend Jacques and this guy Pierre and da-da-da-da. Turned out to be Jacques and Pierre Frenet and a couple other sort of famous New York French chef types. And I just kept quiet and listened. It was really interesting. Over the years, Jacques and I both lived in Connecticut. Over the years, we became closer. And I think Jacques is one of the wisest people in the food industry ever, and certainly of his generation. Really brilliant guy, very, very thoughtful, a terrific home cook, although he was a trained and much revered restaurant chef. He is among the best home cooks you'll ever encounter. Highly, highly skilled, but very inventive, very creative, into quick cooking, into real cooking, just one of the originators. And he's the guy who said to me, a recipe is like a river, you never put your foot in it the same way twice. And I'm pretty sure we talk about this for a while in the course of this conversation. What else is there to say? He is the author of 20, 30 really, really good books, including the deservedly famous La Technique and La Méthode. But his books have become simpler and more beautiful and more accessible over the years. And the latest is called Art of the Chicken, which is a very personal, gorgeous, useful little thing. We're going to talk about that and many other things in our conversation. So here are me and Kate Bittman with Jacques Pepin. When we first met, and I've quoted this conversation so many times that probably I'm getting it wrong, but when we first met, you said to me that a recipe is like a moment in time or like a river, that it's never the same twice.
And I'm wondering, first of all, did I get that right? And second of all, can you unpack that a little bit for us?
Yeah, I think it's pretty accurate. You know, I mean, this is probably the not the problem, but the fact that when you write a recipe, you write it down according to what's going on at that time. I mean, there is never a chicken which is exactly the same amount of fat too, and you cook with gas, you cook with electric, cast iron, enamel. You know, you're in a good mood, you're in a bad mood. It's summer, it's winter, it's humid, it's not humid. So there's absolutely no way, to a certain extent, the recipe can be the same. So when you write a recipe down, by definition, you relate what's going on that day. You put A and B together, and it look a bit dry, so you put a third of a cup of water in it too. You may never have to put a third of a cup of water when you do it again. The point is that you have no choice to do that. So the problem is that you write that recipe down, and it become, this is the way you do that recipe. So on a philosophical level, at least, the fact of writing a recipe probably destroy it. You know, because that's it, you've done it. But still, I would tell people, when you follow a recipe, whoever wrote the recipe, you should follow it exactly the way it is, at least the first time. And if you like it, you're likely to do it again. And the next time you do it, maybe again, the same. By the third time, you say, I put a bit more tomato in there, I put this, that too. And eventually you massage it enough so it become your own. And maybe a year later, 2 years, you don't even remember where it comes from. That's how you do that recipe. And that's the right process for me, that of making a recipe. You know.
Kate has a similar question, but I will just say that has had such a profound influence on me. I think we had that conversation, honestly think we had that conversation in 1985. So that's 40, almost 40 years ago.
Hey.
So I actually have a question about recipes too, because my sister and I we're both cooks. We cook very differently. She's super comfortable improvising, and I have always been sort of a slave to recipes. But recently, I've definitely become more confident and have sort of experimented more and done my own thing. There was a bit in your new book where you write, and I'm quoting you here, "As a professional cook, I always start a new recipe with an idea of how to combine one ingredient with another. This idea may have been triggered by what I see in my garden or at the market, or what I ate at a restaurant or with a friend, or by reading about food." So I'm finally getting to a place where I think about those two initial ingredients. And you're, of course, way more evolved than that and can build those two ingredients into a fully fledged dish. But I'd love to hear a little more about that process, because I do think it's an interesting concept for home cooks who want to move past cooking from recipes. So who sort of have gotten past that initial recipe level and are ready to really be more creative in the kitchen.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I don't agree with the fact that I've spoken to many people who say, you know, I never follow a recipe. I take a recipe and right away they change it too. And I don't think it's fair to whoever wrote the recipe, because you don't really know what it should taste like since you've never done it. That's what I said. At least once or twice, you should do it exactly the way it is written in that particular recipe. Then after, you go on your own, of course. There is absolutely no way that your taste can be exactly the same than mine. You know, if I take you to 10 greatest restaurants in the world, I'm going to pick 4 maybe of those things that are extraordinary, and maybe 4 say they are very, very good. And a couple of them said, I don't really get it. And you may, of course, have a totally different reaction. Ultimately, my reaction is purely a narcissistic reflection on my own taste. The one that I picked up coincides exactly with my sense of taste, with my sense of aesthetic, and so forth. So I pick up those. It cannot be the same for you. And this is the funny part of it, because when I teach at BU, for example, I do like the perfect meal, one of the dishes that I used to do, a roast chicken, a boiled potato, and a salad. Then they're all supposed to do it. I have 15 students. Well, I know before they start, I say, please, you have the basket, you have all your ingredients. I know you're going to blow my mind and make it different, but don't, you know, torture yourself to make it different, because whether you like it or not, I am going to have 15 different chicken today. A couple of them overcooked, a couple undercooked, some burnt, some this, some cold, some hot. But it will be different, because you cannot really do it exactly the same than the guy next to you. So you don't have to torture yourself to be different than the other. Just cook according to your own guts and go and see what you can do to be more creative. Or I don't know if we use that word in the kitchen. It's a question of time too. It's a question of knowledge, a question of doing and doing it again. The thing is that for me as an apprentice, you know, I was in apprenticeship in 1949. So, and at that time, it was a way of learning. You know, when you're a kid, 13 years old, the chef said, do that. You would never have said why. If you had said why, you would have said, because I just told you. That's what about. And that's how you work for at least a year. And one day the chef told me, tomorrow you start at the stove. I said, me? I didn't think that I knew anything at the stove. And through some time of osmosis, yes, I learned. So that was one way of learning. But, you know, the repeat and repeat and repeat of those movements, of those techniques, it become part of your DNA. And that's why I can look at, do a television show, look at the camera and think in terms of the texture of the ingredient or the color or this, that. I don't have to worry about my hand working. And that's very good. I transcend the level at which I have to think about those. So those techniques for me are very important. That being said, I know a fair amount of chefs who are very good technicians, can run a kitchen very well, and they get good food costs. And a relatively lousy cook. So again, you know, the techniques are important. Certainly, if you see someone like Thomas Keller or Daniel Boulud, they are very good technicians, but they are more than that. You know, they have creativity, they have constance, they have many other qualities, you know, to bring to the level at which they are. So
I'm curious, you've been cooking, as you just said, for 73 years or whatever. What are you cooking these days? What are you enjoying when you're in the kitchen?
Well, you know, certainly now I have a lot of tomato in my garden. Last night I had Swiss chard from the garden, some tomato, and I probably do less and less my age now with my garden. But I have a lot of arugula, I have salad too. So ultimately, yes, I had a friend for dinner last night. I did a piece of chicken, and we did well. I have a friend who brought me 50 oysters, so we had oyster to start with, and we had a piece of chicken, some arugula, salad, and some Swiss chard from the garden, and some pear for dessert. That was, you know, nothing really very special, but certainly also the point is that I know I'm going to be 87 years old, so my metabolism is quite different than it used to be. And as a young chef, you tend to add and to add, and maybe to add to the plate, maybe more in the book I did, like The Art of Cooking and so forth. As you get older, then you tend to retreat from the plate to be left with something more essential, without too much embellishment. You know, I don't need, if I have a tomato out of the garden, get a perfect ripe color, temperature, and a bit of salt on top, olive oil, that's it.
I loved reading your new book, Art of the Chicken, and I don't think you even need to be someone who's interested in food to read it, because the stories are also picturesque, and there are actually a couple of them that we wanted to ask you about, because I actually didn't know that your mom ran a restaurant and that you grew up there in the restaurant. How old were you when you started going in, and is that where you learned to cook?
Well, yeah, I mean, we live there. We live in the same place, so it's not like you go to the restaurant. You know, I don't remember ever my two brother and I coming back from school and telling my mother or my father, I'm bored. Say, you're what? Are you kidding? When we came back from school, no one ever asked you to do your homework. That was your problem. But everyone kind of grab you to peel potato or to wash the bottle in the cellar or to do something. It's age 6 or 7. So we try to hide. And do, oh, of course, there is no way that I would have said, oh, I'm bored. You what? Okay, great. So, you know, I don't know, some age 5, 6, we did one thing or another, carrying stuff or, you know, the bottle from the cellar or washing the bottle or doing one thing or another, or picking up the egg from the chicken or feeding the chicken or whatever.
My 6-year-old asked me today if there was some work that he could do to make money. So, I think I'll take a page from your mother's book. And
yeah, it's pretty fascinating. I mean, next week for the foundation, you know, I have a foundation. I'm cooking in New York on Friday. the Hot Bread Kitchen, I think it's called. It's part of a community kitchen that we work with my foundation for that type of stuff, mostly my son-in-law. But in any case, I've been to those places, mostly black kids and black or brown. And I've been amazed sometimes. You know, we're talking about the chicken there. On some kid, 6, 8 years old, for them, a chicken is rectangular with plastic on top. It doesn't have feet or head. It doesn't exist. So it's pretty scary. At some point, and without any question, the kid, you know, when Claudine was a year and a half old, I hold her in my hand, she stirred the pot, I said, hey, mélange, you know, so she, quote, ate it because she made it. That. And likewise with my granddaughter, you know, she sit next to me at the store when she was on a little bench at the counter when she was 4 or 5 years old. And I said, okay, get some parsley. So that's not parsley, that's chive, tested, that's parsley, okay, that. They gave me those tomatoes. You think they're ripe? Did you smell them? Those pears, you think those smell? Are they smelled? She touched it. She goes to, and bring me the salad is washed, it's clean. You know, so it established a kind of platform, you know, and of course you sit down and you share the meal, which is even the better part of it, and that continue a conversation which often moves somewhere else. And that's the beauty of it. But you cannot have the kid eating different than you do, eating hot dog or stuff or whatever the kid eat, you know, but food, and you do a rack of lamb for your guest, and the kid eat different. And after the kid, the first communion or bar mitzvah or whatever, you move them at the table and say, okay, now you eat with us. Kids are not eating that stuff, you know. So, yeah, it has to start. When Claudine was small, I don't think I ever bought once a baby food. You know, whatever we cook that night, before I put too much salt or pepper in it, I put in the food processor or in the blender at the time and make a puree to so she was used to clam and spaghetti, whether it was in a puree, but she was used to that taste when she was 5, 6 years old, you know. So, yeah.
We did that too.
I've already messed that up, but I'm trying to get back on track.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Have you ever bought something, owned something that really inspired you to up your game? A tennis racket, a new pair of running shoes, a new piece of cooking equipment that made you just want to cook your brains out? I know that when I first started cooking on induction burners, I just couldn't stop. It was so much fun. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Some of the features that are available on this car include Dynamic Sky Panorama Glass Roof, Front Row Massaging Seats, you know you want that. Available 33-inch all-terrain tires, which you will want when you check out the multi-terrain select. These are really great features, the kind of features that will make you proud and happy to own a Lexus GX. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
I understand that many chefs have horror stories about kitchens that they've worked in, but I was particularly amazed by the Chef Coulet story about the grilling.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
Can you talk about it? Do you mind recounting it for us? You were 16.
Yeah, I was barely 16. Yeah, I was 16. I finished apprenticeship at 16. I did the season in Aix-les-Bains, you know, at the Hotel d'Albion there. And, you know, the season was 7 days a week, 4 months, you know, day off, because the hotel is open 4 months. And I was sent to the first time I was sent to the grill. So the grill there was two grills, one for fish, one for meat, with charcoal, of course, too. And, but I mean, the chef there, that old guy was, like a kind of a dictator. I mean, we had to turn everything with our finger, you know, no touch, no metal has to touch it, no puncture with fork or whatever. So, you know, we had a bowl of water, you dip your finger in the water and rather up, grab the thing, turn it, put it back your feet in the water. But still, my tip of my finger was kind of white by the end of the summer, you know, all burned. Especially, I remember at the time we were doing a mixed grill, and the mixed grill was a little lamb chop, a little slice of cast liver, a slice of bacon, a tomato and a mushroom. All of that was on the plate that has to be turned. So that was kind of ridiculous. That guy had a little motorcycle, an Albion. Yeah, and and since the hotel was on the hill, we could hear him in the morning coming here. That thing made a lot of noise, and by that time, no one was in the kitchen. Just hearing it from the bottom of the hill, everyone jumped out of bed, get into the kitchen. He came in, take a look. Everyone was there. Then he went to change in his office. You know, so where were?
It's like an alarm clock.
Yeah, but, this, you learn like that with some people who are at the wedding. I mean, certainly at the time, it was pretty common to get kicked in the ass or get a thing like this now, which is a bit different. Now you don't learn this way.
No, when I was young, only French people wanted to be chefs, or pretty much only French people wanted to be chefs. Certainly no one my age ever talked about becoming a chef, let alone a food writer, which didn't even exist, of course, at the time. How do you think things have evolved in kitchens since your experiences with as an apprentice, as a young chef or young would-be chef?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I haven't worked in France in decades, you know, in any kitchen, so I wouldn't, but certainly it has changed now. People, maybe one of the biggest changes would be that more women in the kitchen or that type of things too. But not really for me, because that's actually where I come from. It was only women in the kitchen.
Right.
And, you know, and frankly, even after that, you know, I've done 31 cookbook, like 8 publishers. I have never had a man who was my editor. I have done 13 series of 26 shows with PBS. 13 series of 26 shows. That's hundreds and hundreds of shows. It was always a woman who was my producer, executive producer, too. For 8 years, almost 10 years in the New York Times, I had a column too. So I think I had three editors every 3-4 years, was already a woman. I opened the French Culinary Institute. I was hired by Dorothy Kahn, who was a woman, but my boss. And I've been teaching at Boston University for 34 years now, Rebecca Allison, who hired me and was my boss for all those years. So in a sense, for me, I've always worked with women much more than with men. So, but yes, certainly the kitchen is different.
We want to explore history a little bit more. You were, I don't know how many people, and people will know this when they read Art of the Chicken, but you were Charles de Gaulle personal chef, and then you moved to the States where you were offered and turned down a chef, a job as John Kennedy's personal chef. And you went to work for Howard Johnson's with Pierre Frenet. Can you talk a little bit about that decision and that experience?
Yes. I mean, you know, when I work with I work with three presidents under the Fourth Republic in France between 56, 58, the end of 58. I, of course, was never come to have some kudos in the dining room. I think it exists. I had never had an interview with television, barely existed, but a magazine or newspaper, or that did not exist, period, at all. The cook was in the stove behind the kitchen. And if anyone came to the kitchen because something went wrong and you were going to get yelled at, that was about the end of it. You know, I saw people like Eisenhower, Nehru, Tito, Macmillan, those were the head of state, you know, at the time, kind of sneak behind the door to try to take a pick of them. But that was about it. So when I came to New York and worked at the Pavillon, and then because of the story at the Pavillon, so it ended up being at La Caravelle that Roger Fessaguet called me. They need a chef at the White House. They want to have you and so forth. And I had no inkling and no idea, to be truthful, of the potential of publicity or stuff, because of what I had been exposed to was totally different. In fact, at that time, if I recall exactly, it was a woman who was chef at the White House before René Verdon too. No one would have known her name too. It took exactly the same thing here that it was in France. No one knew what was with a lady from the South somewhere. So we end up, they called me once and they called me another time, a couple of weeks later. And I said, no, I had started studying at Columbia too, and I had some friends in New York already. I didn't really want to change, but to be truthful, I had no idea inkling of that type of potential. I ended up going to Howard Johnson. You know, I learned about American eating habits, about chemistry of food, about production, about many things like that. Eventually, I opened a potagerie 10 years after Howard Johnson. I worked there 10 years. I opened a potagerie on Fifth Avenue. Then I was a consultant for the Russian Tea Room a number of years. Then I opened the World Trade Center with Joe Baum, set up the commissary and the whole food operation too. I would never have been able to do any of those jobs without the training of Howard Johnson. As a French chef, I knew nothing about production, marketing, American English. So Howard Johnson was very, very beneficial. It was very good. It was another world. You know? So, but it was maybe based on some type of conviction or whatever. No, it was just because I didn't realize what the potential was, I guess.
This is not a question. I just want to give you an opportunity to talk about Pierre if you'd like to do that. If you don't want to do that, that's fine. We move on.
Of course. You know, when I came to America, I arrived. I came on a student boat and I took the train from Montreal up to Grand Central, took a cab to get to a guy who had a restaurant called La Toque Blanche. There was kind of my sponsor too. And the day after, he took me to the Pavillon. And already there, I came with all my certificates in France. You know, you show yourself because you work in quality of such and such from that amount to that amount, whether it was with De Gaulle or with Plaza, and I have all my certificate. He didn't want to see them. He said, no, it doesn't matter. You work here, there, too, fine. So I said, chef, to become, he said, no, Pierre, you call me Pierre. I said, well, already, it has changed within France, just the attitude and all that of the chef. And I started at the Pavillon right away. And of course, I became very friends with Pierre and his family and so forth at the time. And then by extension with Craig. I mean, you know, I knew Helen McCullough, with the food editor of McCall, House Beautiful, live on 50 Saigon, I live on 50th Street. And I met Helen, so she came, become my surrogate mother, if you want. Through Helen, I met James Beard, and I met Helen actually through Craig, because Craig came to review the pavilion and did, and talked with Pierre, and they talked to me. So So 6 months after I was here, I knew the trinity of cooking in America, which was James Beard, Julia Child, and Craig LeBeau. So the world of food was really very small, very, very small at the time. I didn't know one white American chef. You know, I live in New York. All the chefs that I knew at the big hotel, restaurant, Hilton Hotel, were Italian, French, a lot of Swiss, French, German too. And that's it. The first American chef that I met was Howard Johnson. When Mr. Johnson said, "You have to work in a restaurant for a few months," well, I went on Queens Boulevard there and get into the Howard Johnson Queens Boulevard for like 3 months, whatever. You do as you do in the kitchen. You know, you show your what you can do, and you know, start flipping burger and working on the things that I hadn't worked on before. You know, mashed potato, brown potato. You know, hot dog, burger, eggs, stuff. So yes, I learned a great deal too.
You've had incredible experiences, amazing accomplishments, gone past where most chefs could ever hope to go. And yet you've done something that almost no chefs have done before, which is write good recipes, and done that thousands and thousands of times. Was there a transitional period in there? Because, you know as well as I do that most chefs don't write good recipes, but you do.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I didn't have one book. I had the Répertoire de la Cuisine, the tiny thing, because we had it in Paris in my pocket when you work at different restaurants. So what is that garnish? That's about the only book I ever had. I came to America, and then I started and had Howard Johnson. Then I started setting up recipe. That's when I was director of research and development. So I was there to start making recipe too. With Pierre, we started with 3 chicken and we finished with 3,000 pounds of chicken, you know, doing a pot pie or whatever. But then that was like a long apprenticeship of 10 years for me to make recipe, to organize it too. And I think I'm pretty Cartesian this way. So I like to organize and clear and so forth. So I've always was interested in this. So, yes, but that's at Howard Johnson that I learned to write recipe, no question.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Were you horrified by American food when you got here?
Not really, actually. You know, I live on 50th and 1st Avenue on top of La Toque Blanche, that restaurant that I had there. And my first exposure was there to go to a restaurant, to go to a supermarket, which just happened. It was relatively new, the supermarket. I thought it was fantastic. I didn't have the butcher, this, everything was under the same roof, except all of a sudden I realized there was a lot of package. There was great meat, there was beef, there was lobster, there were a rack of lamb, so very big too, but there was one salad, iceberg. There was no leek, there was no shallot, there was no barely parsley, there was no oriental vegetable, and I remember saying, where is the mushroom? Aisle 5, that was canned mushroom. You gotta go to a specialty store to get mushroom in New York. So, you know, it was another world, you know, very different than what I've heard. And you look at the supermarket now, they will be not beautiful as they are today. You know, it's a different world.
What are you having for dinner tonight?
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't decided that. I have to look what I have in my freezer. I know I'm going to have tomato because I basically have tomato all the time now that they
are all eating tomatoes every day right now.
Yep.
And I think I'm going to have a piece of fish. I had some fish at mahi-mahi in my freezer. So, and maybe some clam because I had some oyster and clam someone brought me. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, that does it for us, Jacques. Thank you so much for your time. Good luck with the new book. I love seeing you. I love talking to you. I love you. You're the best.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, happy cooking and have a great day.
Okay. Thank you, Jacques. You too.
Take care. Thank you.
I have such a nice recipe for you today from Jacques. I wish I had gotten him to read it because, you know, it's so much fun to listen to him. But they are called Eggs Jeanette.
And it's not a formal recipe. It's an informal one, as so many of his are. I am just going to read it, no fake accent, straight from the book. I christened Maman's most famous and perhaps my family's favorite egg dish, Eggs Jeannette, after her. Mama split hard-cooked eggs in half lengthwise and removed the yolks. She made a persillade by chopping garlic and parsley together and mashed it into the yolks, along with salt and pepper. She added a few tablespoons of milk to blend the ingredients, and then she spooned them back into the hollowed-out whites, setting aside a few tablespoons worth for a sauce. This is me, Mark, interrupting now. So basically you have garlic, parsley, deviled eggs at this point. No mayonnaise, interestingly enough. Now I'm back to Jacques's voice. I suppose she could have stopped there and had very good stuffed eggs. But Mama elevated the dish to something truly special by frying the eggs stuffed side down in a skillet with a dash of butter or oil. They browned beautifully after a couple of minutes. To complete the dish, she topped the eggs with a sauce made from the yolk mixture she reserved along with Dijon-style mustard, peanut oil, and a dribble of vinegar. There you have it, Eggs Jeannette. Enjoy that. There we go. I hope you enjoyed that as much as we did. I hope you could tell how much we enjoyed it. So thank you to my friend Jacques, who will always be one of my favorites, for sharing his wisdom and his memories. You can follow him on Instagram at Jacques Pepin Foundation. That's JACQUESPEPIN Foundation, all one word. And Art of the Chicken is out now. Thank you all for joining us. Please do subscribe to the podcast and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. Again, we are at food@markbittman.com and happy to hear from you. Thank you to my co-host, Kate Bittman, and to Davis Lloyd, our engineer. Thank you all for listening, and tune in next week when I promise you we will have somebody amazing. Bye for now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.